live and local,
across the city
and South Cambridgeshire.
This is Alex Elbrow.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
Local historian Anthony Carpen will be here every month to discuss different aspects of the history of the town of Cambridge, both people and places, which he's been researching for over 4 years now. To start the series, Anthony suggested that we discuss the Lost Cambridge Project, how and why we've forgotten the story of the women who made modern Cambridge and how they've been rediscovered in recent years. I first asked him if he could explain how the Lost Cambridge Project got started.
Yes, it was quite random, actually, how it started. I think it was a mixture of seeing some photographs of Cambridge, the town, in the more distant past, and seeing a number of buildings in old photographs that were no longer there. And so I thought to myself, what's the story behind those buildings that are no longer there? For example, the old Guildhall that used to be there up until just before the Second World War, through to the wonderful Playhouse cinema that we used to have on Mill Road, which is currently, I believe, being redeveloped and turned into a supermarket.
I didn't even know about that one.
Well, that's the old Sally Ann's place.
Oh, yes. So on the corner there of Tennyson Road.
Yep.
And so after you found these photos, what sort of led you on to do some more work on them?
I think it was a mixture of having a conversation with Hilary Cox, the local artist, who's doing a number of different projects, including at the old Mill Road Depot site, going through the archives, some of the small photo archives at the Museum of Cambridge. It was from there that I stumbled across the British newspaper archive. So I thought, okay, what's this all about? And the British Newspaper Archive online is in this process of digitising something like 800 million newspaper pages.
Wow.
I think they've got about 40 million at the moment and are still going. And so I got a subscription there and I thought, well, okay, let's see if we can type in some keywords and see what comes up. And so one of the keywords I put in was the Cambridge Guildhall, just to try and get a feel for what was going on. Through that, a number of different names came up. And one name that kept on coming up repeatedly was Florence Ada Keynes. And so once I started pulling on that thread, that's when everybody else kind of came tumbling out, in particular Eglantine Jebb, the founder of Save the Children.
Yes, I've heard of her.
It was when I was in the Cambridgeshire collection, I started browsing through some of their very, very old and ancient books, and there was one that said Cambridge, a brief study. And it was just like, this is not a brief study, because it was over 200 pages. And I thought, well, okay, let's have a look at this. And I was like, Egeb, who's he? And it turned out it was Eglantine, who was actually a woman. Browsing through it, the first two chapters of the book, and it was published in late 1906, the first chapters of the book read as a very brief summary of Cambridge between the years 1800 and 1900. What we forget, or perhaps what we never knew in the first place, was that the town of Cambridge quadrupled in population over that period of time.
And so Eglantine Jebb, when was she around in this time? What was her
dates? Rocked up at the very end of Queen Victoria's reign and stayed really till about 1913.
Okay.
Before she went off to bigger and greater things, such as founding Save the Children. But in the time that she was here, she researched and wrote the first social scientific study of poverty and multiple deprivation in Cambridge's history.
Wow.
And it still reads as relevant today as it was in the time that she wrote it.
So why do you think these women were not sort of written about before? We didn't know about them, rather.
The obvious explanation is the institutionalised sexism of the history academia and the history subject group. Because actually we did know about them and we forgot about them. And I think this is something that as historians we need to make the point that their work was covered in the local newspapers. It was on the front pages. These people were local household names, but it never has been formally recorded in the history books. Because if you go into any bookshop in town and you compare, let's say, the military history section to the section on Cambridge local history, you can just see the gulf. Same with comparing military history to social history or anything else. Basically, the places where, in particular, women were active and achieving great things, things is just not, I wouldn't say not written about, it is written about, but it's not taken on by the publishers or the publishing industry, and then it's not promoted in the bookshops. Whereas,
and then it gets lost in time, I guess, through exactly. the generations. So is this how the Lost Cambridge Project came about?
In part, yes, because reading Eglantine's book, the first thing that struck me was actually there is a really great story here to tell that we've forgotten. And then when I threw in Eglantine's name into a search engine, here we had the founder of Save the Children. I'm just like, how the hell did we not know about this? Why isn't there a big statue of her in Market Square?
It was her and her sister, wasn't it? I think her sister was very influential in that as well. I've seen
it was read well, recently as well. Dorothy Buxton, her younger sister, hard as nails, that woman. I mean, this is a woman who in 1935 flew over to Nazi Germany and told Hermann Göring what a scoundrel he was, and came back from Germany as a committed anti-fascist, which takes some doing at a time when Stanley Baldwin's policy was one of appeasement. And so the findings, and this is from the recent biography, I think it's by Petter Dunstan.
Yes, that's right. I've heard a talk by her.
Yeah, the big finding that she made was actually almost as a memorial to Eglantine, who died an untimely death at the age of 52. In one sense, over-promoted Eglantine at the expense of herself. And actually a lot of the work in the early years of Save the Children was actually a partnership between the two. And so her conclusion from her research, and this is why historical research is ever so important, is when new evidence comes up and is presented and analysed, it means that we've got to reassess what we originally thought we had. So that's what historians do. It's constantly rewriting and refreshing and improving the histories. It's not just taking the first person who wrote it and then saying, don't change it.
That's really interesting. It just shows that it's actually quite a live subject. People think of it as, oh, history, that's in the past, so that's done and dusted. But actually what you're saying is that it's something that needs to be revisited and refreshed, really, given the light of other evidence.
Yes.
So you've gone on for this project and have started to unearth lots of different people and places. And where's that taken you recently?
I think for me, the most important thing with this project is to try and inspire a new generation. And I don't mean that age-wise. I mean that by people who would otherwise not have thought that this was either relevant or even of interest to them. And to use the historical content that I'm picking up as a means to inspire artists, musicians, and playwriters and poets to produce new material so as to use the arts to tell the story of our city and how it became what it is today. The reason why that is ever so important is because our city is changing, and it is changing very, very rapidly, as you see with all of the building work. Now, in order to ensure that local residents have much more of a say and an influence on how that happens, we've got to have a much stronger, if I can put it this way, sense of place. And one of the ways of having a stronger sense of place is to have a proper understanding of how we got to where we are today, and in particular, who has to go through what struggles to get to where we are today. So, for example, just after the end of the Second World War, we had the Cambridge Development Plan by Sir William Holford and Miles Wright, who decided what the new transport system might look like. And two of their ideas, one was an eastern spine road through the centre of town, which involved a dual carriageway across Christ's Pieces. Mm-hmm. And another involved an eastern bypass, which involved a massive road flyover over Stourbridge Common, linking Milton Road and Newmarket Road. Mm. Now, a lot of people say, well, hang on a minute, there is no flyover across Stourbridge Common, and there is no dual carriageway across Christ's Pieces. So what is the story between Holford and Wright saying, here's our big thick red line on these maps, and those routes ultimately not being built? And obviously there is a story of rebellion from the local people and a story of protest, which basically said, actually, we're not going to get this built because the people don't want it, and they really don't want it to the extent that they are prepared to obviously make life very, very difficult for the politicians.
So it's been going a long time then, moaning about roads and struggles with getting roads and transport built. So that's interesting, very interesting. So actually, if people want to hear more about this, is there anything published yet, or is it going to be published in the future, or where should they look?
At the moment, I put everything up on my blog, which is lostcambridge.wordpress.com. I try to put something up every week or every other week, and it's a mixture of things I've read in books to transcripts of original newspaper reports, because in those days, from 100 plus years ago, there were no photographs. So what happened at meetings would be transcribed word for word, heckles included when it comes to
brilliant.
And so the great thing about some of those articles is they read as drama scripts.
Oh, so that makes them perfect then for plays or radio plays or any plays.
Yes, and that's one of the things I would like to see certain creatives doing, is taking some of those newspaper cuttings and those transcripts and turning them into plays, in particular plays suitable for secondary school students.
Yes, that'd be brilliant.
One of the things I would love to work with a group of people on is producing what is effectively a musical on the history of Cambridge, the town, and get different local singer-songwriters to produce some songs that populate it, because I think one of the few enjoyable things I did at secondary school was taking part in a very large musical, and I would love for a new generation of secondary school children to have a similar experience, but rather than base it on just a random musical, have it based on something where they're actually learning about the history of where they live, as well as at the same time as learning new skills and having fun.
That sounds brilliant. So if anyone was interested in taking on this on board, how can they get in contact with you?
Yeah, if you just drop me an email, it's anthonycarpen@gmail.com. So it's Anthony without an H, and then Carpen, which is basically carpenter without the T-E-R at the end.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much for that, Anthony. It's really interesting, and I look forward to catching up with you again next month, and we'll focus more on a particular personal place next month, won't we?
Yeah, we'll do. Cambridge 105 Radio.